All right, let's get right to it, because we got a ton of questions for local Congressman Glenn Thompson, who joins us in studio.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good to be with you.
Didn't bring the donuts, but
no, I failed to bring the donuts.
Okay, we're going to go straight to the hardball questions here.
Not much. Oh well.
No donuts. Okay.
It's part of the Make America Healthy.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah, GT figured he's going to start with the morning show
you
here.
Know what? I think
Let's Talk needs to get healthier.
I think donuts are healthy because that whole middle was like. No calories.
You got that right. That's a great point, actually.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Unless you get the cream-filled donut, then that doesn't work right. So. All right, let's get serious here. Although, let me start with a softball, all right? This was an historic week. Wednesday was an interesting day. You were there. Describe down there on Wednesday. What was the feeling? What was the energy when you finally got to do the voting and so on? What happened on Wednesday?
Well, from my perspective, it was a day of optimism because we had been in a shutdown, historic shutdown, longest in history. Thanks to Senator Schumer. I mean, they're the ones that drove it. I voted 2 months ago to keep the government open and to be able to provide the essential services that the American people expect. But it was optimism that day because it had been worked through. I was really impressed what Leader Thune in the Senate was able to bring together. It was a good plan. CR Plus is Continuing Resolution Plus is what we made reference to it. It took us to January 30th for 9 of the 12 appropriation bills. It included full funding for 3 of them through the end of the year. And one of those was agriculture. The agriculture appropriation bills, as the chairman of the House Agriculture Committee, what was included in that was just outstanding. And so, to me, it was just a matter of waiting and optimism. I mean, I really felt like we had the votes. And at the end of the day, I was surprised with the number of my Democrat friends. Not all of them. Don Davis from North Carolina, he's on my committee. He's a Democrat, but he is a good friend. He's a great member of Congress. I think he represents his constituents well. And I wasn't shocked that he voted for this package. So it was, although I will say the best feeling of the day is when the vote count was done. And
I'm sure.
And then probably about 2 hours, hour and a half, 2 hours later, President Trump put his signature on it.
So everything that happened Wednesday, you were expecting to happen? Like, for instance, let's see, it was what? 6 Democrats peeled off and voted for this thing. Was that expected before the vote on Wednesday?
I wasn't shocked by it because it really was a good package. And especially if you represent rural America, this was an outstanding package with the agriculture appropriations, the extension of the Farm Bill. I was able to put in an extension to September 30th. Now, I also made it quite clear earlier in the week with the Speaker, I don't need all that time. Now, we're in the home stretch of the second part of the Farm Bill, Farm Bill 2.0. As we've talked before on your show, we passed 80% of the Farm Bill as a part of the H.R. 1, One Big Beautiful Bill that the president signed on July 4th. And so I wasn't surprised we picked up a few additional votes.
All right. Now, if I recall, 2 Republicans voted against. Now, are these 2 guys, I'm only following media. I'm only following media. The Democrats, either in the Senate, those, 7, 8 Democrats that voted to get past the filibuster, and then the 6 Democrats in the House on Wednesday that voted for. I mean, I'm seeing, nasty things headed their way and comments and so on. The 2 Republicans, are they being ostracized, essentially? Are they being, get rid of those guys?
Thomas Massie was one of them, and that wasn't a surprise. Thomas, he consistently votes no on just about everything. I will say I have his support on the Farm Bill. We've been working together he has a provision I helped him tweak, put into the Farm Bill that, really to help mom and pop meat processors, because we need more of them. And he had a really good idea. He had some problems, but he was willing to be at the table. And so I think Thomas Thomas Massey's used to taking heat. the other gentleman, Mr. Stubbe from Florida, he had some real concerns with a provision that the Senate put in. You know, the senators had a lot of their personal information that was really stolen by government agencies. In terms of phone records and those kinds of things. And Senator Thune agreed to amendment that would allow, really the senators to have some due process. I happen to agree with that. Just because you're a member of Congress doesn't mean you're not an American. You don't have individual rights. And if whether it's a government or a non-government agency is preying on your private information and using it and spying on you, then there ought to be some recourse. Now, the recourse was being allowed to sue for a significant amount of money. And that's what Mr. Stubbe's concern was.
Okay. Now, you mentioned a little bit ago some things are getting fully funded. I think SNAP is one of those, right?
Yeah, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. In my mind, we've gone from shutdown to rebound. And there are some things within the Agriculture Appropriations Subcommittee, which are funds most of the things I'm responsible for as the chairman of the House Agriculture Committee. And that included nutrition, which is really important, and it should be there for folks who really need it, folks who are struggling, living really at or near poverty. Now, understand that SNAP is just supplemental. Technically, a lot of people don't understand that. You're responsible to provide for yourself and then rely on your family, rely on your church, maybe community organizations. And then the final part is the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. And so, yes, that is fully funded through the end of the fiscal year. And there were some other provisions within that I'm really supportive of. It directs the Secretary of Agriculture to take a hard look of how could we make it so that the food that the SNAP EBT card, the benefits can be used for, is to buy food that's made in America. I mean, that's just common sense, right? It would go, with that, because, that's, first of all, it's your best position to get fresh, fresh food, locally grown type food.
Yeah.
And so it also funded the WIC program, the Women, Infant, Children program, really important program. So it actually increased that. Someone who kind of leads the nation on dairy, it increased the amount of fluid milk that would go into the WIC program as well.
All right. Now, again, end of the year, you said, that's not December 31st. That's September.
That's September 30th. Okay. We run a budget. Federal budget is October 1st to September 30th.
All right. But is the feeling, Congressman, still that there are some people getting SNAP benefits that just shouldn't be getting them? You mentioned supplemental.
Yeah.
All right. And is that correct? B, how do you figure out who these people apparently are?
Yeah. We already addressed that problem. We did that. That was part of the provisions that with the agriculture title of H.R. 1, which is like the official title now is the Working Family Tax Cuts Bill, one big beautiful bill signed on July 4th. The agriculture title was a title I put together. It was significant, and it did provide some reforms to SNAP to make sure that there was transparency, accountability, and really that the benefits are going to the people who truly are eligible, the people that are struggling financially. Because we did have, there were some cases of abuse. A lot of it wasn't in the legislation that we were administering out of Washington. It was the execution of the SNAP program by the states. I mean, the states were really lazy on this. Their error rate, Pennsylvania's error rate, 2-3 years ago was 18% error rate. Unacceptable. Now they got it down to 11%, but I put a provision that basically said that unless you get your error rate under 5% or under, you were going to be held accountable for paying part of the costs. And, you know, what we wanted to do was incentivize better performance. And and Pennsylvania's has been down in the past. It just hasn't been down there under the past 3.5 years. Mm-hmm. And I'm not picking on Pennsylvania. The other states were the same way. So we put a lot of great accountability measures. I put that into the agriculture title, the One Big Beautiful Bill. The sad part was, though, who are the folks that have to implement that at the federal level? Oh, that would be USDA employees who, by the way, were furloughed when Senator Schumer shut the government down. And so that's another reason I was really happy and elated that we got the government back open, because we made some great changes and some improvements. Well, in terms of tax policy and education policy, but specifically, obviously, agriculture policy. But you got to have the folks, you know, to be able to execute those right to regulations and get that law implemented. And those folks are all back to work now, and that's the good news. So we've done a lot. We've really done some great overhaul improvements to the nutrition program.
Okay, so all right. SNAP, there's the state government and there's the federal government. Who has more jurisdiction over those benefits? The state governments?
No, federal government in terms of the program itself, but the execution, the administration, happens at the state level.
Okay.
And you know, you think about it, there's an old adage, if you're spending your own money, you're careful. If you send somebody else's money, you're not so careful. And that's what was happening with the SNAP program, because SNAP was fully funded by the federal government. And so, you know, If whoever was responsible at the state level got a little loose and they decided that they were, you know, they would make more people eligible than what should be, you know, they kind of got away with that. Now, eventually these errors catch up with the states. Now, Pennsylvania paid tens of millions of dollars in fines to the federal government, you know, because of their error rates. And so there was, and the error rates really hurt the people that were struggling, you know, from meal to meal or paycheck to paycheck. And I'll give you an example. You know, if on your EBT card it gets charged, you know, they put a certain amount of money on it every month. Well, if they put, if they underfund it, that's an obvious hurts the family that needs to use it. But believe it or not, it's even a bigger problem when they overcharge it, when they put more money in what they're eligible for. Because what happens is, in the next month, 3-6 months later, the state comes back and claws that money back. So you have a family that shows up to buy their groceries, and they use their cash and a check or maybe a debit card, hopefully not a credit card, and then they use their SNAP benefits, and they find they have zero benefits on their SNAP card. Well, that kind of disrupts their shopping pattern of what they need for nutrition. So whether it's an overpayment or an underpayment, it really hurts the people who need it most. And, you know, and I'm very proud of the fact that we put provisions, the law now, as we did with HR1, corrects that.
All right, Mr. Ironhead, I got 5,000 other questions. You go ahead.
Well, I want to go delve a little bit into the financial industry, if you will. We stopped producing pennies. There's a lot of talk about, are we just going to do away with coins? And quickly following that, are we just going to do away with cash? And I am one of those, it just makes me, nervous is not a strong enough word. Like, this, to me, is not a healthy path for us to be going down. I think it is already too easy for the government to track our whereabouts. There is some stuff, and I get it, there's going to be some people that abuse it and all of that. Doggone it, man. I ought to be able to spend my money without you, the government, the big you, knowing everything that I'm doing with my money. That is not the government's business.
Now, Jeff, I agree with you 100%. I don't want Big Brother knowing, as far as I'm concerned, it's none of their business. When in terms of what I'm purchasing and those types of things, there's no discussion on any other coins, and there's a real pushback, a strong pushback about moving to something other than a cash basis. You know, because, you know, I worked a lot on, I'm becoming a leader on cryptocurrency.
Yeah, and I want to follow up with that.
And we sent a provision to the Senate already, you know, that said that we're not going to be using crypto to replace, to replace sort of the cash system that we have here. Now, the pennies is an interesting thing, and there's good and bad, actually. Right. The bad is it costs like 4 to 5 cents to print one penny, and so that's why they've decided to discontinue. Yep. I guess that's kind of common sense and smart.
It is.
The bad part of it, though, is what happens of rounding off. I mean, I'm afraid for the consumer that now it's only pennies, but it's pennies over a lifetime. Do they round up, you know, the retailers or the wholesalers, and versus the actual cost, and that gives me some heartburn. But you know, and the fact that the print a penny, I think, was 4 cents more, cost 4 cents to print it, and you know, there'll still be pennies out there in the market. I imagine maybe there are people starting to hoard pennies. I'm not sure.
I am sure.
Yeah, I think they are.
That is occurring.
All right.
Quick follow up on that. Where are we at with cryptocurrency?
Yeah.
And I know you did some explaining last time you were in. I am still having trouble wrapping my head around it. I'm still reading about it. Can you maybe try again to get through dense people like me the importance, because there's clearly something happening here. I mean, a big movement toward it. And I think primarily because it's something new and I don't understand it, it's making me nervous. But I freely acknowledge it's because I don't understand it and it's new. But can you take me through what is kind of happening here, grand scale stuff, because clearly something big is happening.
Yeah, it really started out, it really is the Wild Wild West. Folks, probably, I don't know, about 20 years ago maybe, I may have my dates wrong, this movement was started to be able to, and it goes to what you had mentioned, your concern about oversight and too much government control and monitoring. And it was a movement with cryptocurrency, really for folks who would like to be able to, to make purchases, to make investments you don't have to pay a third party, you know, whether it's a bank or a lending institution, like with a credit card, and, you know, you have control, more control. And it's not for everybody, I don't think, but for those who are interested in it, it's growing. I mean, it's got to be at least $3 trillion worth of the economy worldwide. It's important enough. I explain it, and maybe I oversimplify, but I call it, I'll just start at the beginning. You know, United States of America was at the epicenter of Internet 1.0, which was the Internet of knowledge. And then we went to the Internet of things. And so that's today. You know, you can go online, you can get a plane ticket, or you can order something or whatever. And Internet 3.0 is the Internet of value. And so there's not too many countries around the world that are not competing. They would like to displace the United States, who has been at the epicenter of this, and they want to be, you know, whether it's Great Britain or China or a lot of small Caribbean countries, quite frankly. And you compound that with the fact, though, that most people today want to do business with the United States more than any other country in the world. We may have problems, but we're still, in the words of our founder, we're not perfect, but we're perfecting. And the founders had it right. And I think that's why it's really important that the United States really at the epicenter of the Internet of value. And so we put forward legislation. My bill, it passed out of the House. It's in the Senate. The Senate just drafted their own bill. I'm trying to think what two members took the lead on that. It might have been John Bozeman, actually, and Cory Booker, two interesting opposites on this issue. And Cory Booker actually has been pretty good on we don't, I don't agree a lot with what the senator from New Jersey does, but this is one he's been pretty good. And evidence of that is he took most of the provisions from my Clarity Act and used that for a basis with the Senate bill that they put together. And just to give you some idea, the principles that I've used in working on this, and a lot of folks listening may wonder, why the heck is the chairman of the House Agriculture Committee working on cryptocurrency? Well, that's because when it's traded, it's a commodity. And any type of commodity trading comes under my jurisdiction. You know, originally it started out wheat and corn and soybeans or sorghum, whatever. And then it was oil and it's gold. And now it's cryptocurrency. And the Commodities Future Trading Corporation is the agency that regulates that and protects consumers and makes sure that people aren't taken advantage of. But cryptocurrency is different from those other commodities. And so we needed to put together safeguards. So my first principle in working on this is, number one, protect the consumer. Absolutely. Learned that in my 28 years in healthcare. It's in my DNA. But the second principle I used in doing this is let's foster innovation, because there will be opportunities here and things maybe we can't even envision today over the horizon where the use of cryptocurrency will be able to facilitate, be good for consumers, be good for the economy. And if we're doing that and protecting consumers, it's a really good thing. And so we do have so we have the Clarity Act. We have a separate bill that went to the that passed out of the House, went to the Senate. And that was one to make sure that crypto does not replace our currency. You know, it doesn't become a national currency. And so I'm really pleased that and that's sitting in the Senate. I suspect that that will move with whatever else goes.
All right. Let's take a break right here. We're talking with Congressman Glenn Thompson about an interesting week and other things coming up. You're listening to Let's Talk on 98.7 The Fox. Lots more questions when we come right back.
Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox.
Fox Sports.
Bigger and better than ever, it's the 2026 Happy Valley Comic Convention, February 28th and March 1st at Nittany Valley Sports Center. 100,000 square feet of fun with special guest Tricia Helfer, the gorgeous Cylon from Battlestar Galactica, and Tracy Coco from Star Trek, along with actors from Pokemon, Dragon Ball Z, and other Japanese series. Collectibles, discussions, artist costume contest, and much more. Get your tickets starting now at $8 at HappyValleyComicCon.com. Kids 10 and under free on Sunday. HappyValleyComicCon.com. Made possible by a grant from the Happy Valley Adventure Bureau.
Eating healthy is important for us and for our animals. The Center Hall Farm Store knows this. Local, fresh ingredients are put in all of our feeds. Expert care from people ingrained in our community. If you haven't been to the Center Hall Farm Store yet, do yourself and your animals a favor and stop on in at 110 Allison Street in Center Hall. See what a difference the local touch can make in providing real quality. And be sure to check out our website at centerhallfarmstore.com.
Looking for something different? But you want something that's quick and affordable that won't set you back in the pocketbook? Then you need to head down to Brothers Pizza and Courthouse Pub right next to the Center County Courthouse on North Allegheny Street in downtown Belfast. They feature only the best pizza in town and also the finest selections from Robin Hood Brewing Company, University Wines, and Big Spring Liquors. Come celebrate happy hour in Happy Valley every Tuesday through Saturday from 4 to 6 at Brothers Pizza and Courthouse Pub in downtown Belfast.
Getting ready for tailgating or weekend? You need to stock up at the 64 Beer Store near Lamar. The 64 Beer Store has the coldest beer in the county. Over 400 selections, including IPAs, ciders, Oktoberfest beers, cocktails, and wines.
The 64 Beer Store carries ready-to-drink cocktails.
Conveniently located near Lamar on Nittany Valley Drive, just a half mile north from I-80 on Route 64. On the way from here to there. Stop in today.
When winter's at its worst, snowplow professionals need the best. That's why your local Boss dealer has the ultimate lineup of snow and ice solutions you need. Front to back, Boss leads with advanced truck plows and spreaders, compact equipment, heavy equipment, and time-saving tools to clear any surface area. Keep them open with a Boss snowplow, built to back you up.
Maxwell Truck and Equipment, 1705 East Trout Road, State College. Call them at 814-234-2672.
WFXX, once again,
your sports radio.
Broadcasting live, loud and proud from Central PA's Sports Authority.
Woo-hoo!
WFXS America.
The Foxy Knowledge.
It's Let's Talk here on a Friday morning. Jeff and Scott with you. And, yeah, we're ready to officially launch the three-day party weekend.
All right. We're joined here by Congressman Glenn Thompson for a bit more. Okay, here we go. The gorilla in the room. Healthcare subsidies. Oh, for goodness sakes, I got tired. Congressman, I got tired of hearing about all this. I had a comment a few days ago that for the Democrats in D.C., this was their hill to die on. Now, you're nodding your head. Does that sound about right? They pinned everything on this.
Well, that was the talking points right up until it wasn't. And they talked about it less and less and less, and then they basically retreated from it at the end of the day. You know, we need to do some things on health care. There's no doubt about it. The cost of health care is outrageous. You know, the Affordable Care Act has really proven to be unaffordable. And how do I know that? Because during COVID, when the Democrats had created these subsidies to prop it up from failing. But even the Democrats back then, when they did that during COVID, knew that they couldn't sustain it forever. And that's why the Democrats put an expiration date for those subsidies of December 31st of 2025. And so they are set to expire. You know, I think that the fact that you needed to have subsidies on something that was supposed to become increased accessibility and affordability and failed on especially on the affordability side. I think we have done some other things that failed to get recognition. The support for rural health clinics is something I've championed. I've been a leader on telemedicine, and telemedicine is a great way to get access to some of the finest doctors in the country. Mostly in your state, still working on being able to cross state lines. I did accomplish that for our military and our veterans. President Obama signed my STEP Act, which served active duty military reserve and guard, which allowed you to use a doctor anywhere in the country. And under President Trump, I did the Vets Act. That allowed our veterans to be able to do the same kind of thing. You can't treat everything with telemedicine, but you can certainly make it more accessible and I think more affordable, because when you look at how many patients a physician can treat, if it's appropriate for telemedicine, you know, you don't have to, shouldn't need to charge as much, right? Plus the travel and the discomfort for some patients to be able to come in. But those are the kinds of things, you know, but we need to build a system around recognizing that people have pre-existing conditions and they need to be able to figure out how to affordably pay for the care that they need to have, how that's paid for. I don't think it needs to be a cookie cutter, though. I mean, and that's what the Affordable Care Act did. I mean, I think it was somewhere, and I'm probably going to mess this percentage up, but it was single-digit percentage of folks who didn't have access to health care. And what the Affordable Care Act, so-called Affordable Care Act, did, it changed everybody's health care. It made it more expensive and out of reach for many at this point. And so we have to keep working on health care. I don't think the subsidy, propping up a failed system, at least propping it up any intermediate or long term, is not smart, because that's like not treating the disease. That's masking over the symptom, you know, so I'm, you know, this is something that's always interested me. Obviously, I've been very involved in, because of, you know, I was involved in healthcare for 28 years before I decided to run for Congress.
All right. So the subsidies end December 31st. Then what happens?
Well, I'm not sure what happens on December 31st, because the Senate, I think the first step between now and then is Senator Thune has promised the Senate Democrats that there would be a vote on continuing the subsidies. If I had to guess, this is what my gut tells me, I guess. You know, it's not going to be I would be surprised if it's a straightforward vote on just continuing the subsidies. Because anybody that looks honestly at the Affordable Care Act knows that it has not made things more affordable. We've had consolidation. It has driven consolidation of hospitals and providers. You know, hospitals are struggling now. Now there are certain hospitals you go to, they charge you like a an amenity fee. They call it different things just to get in the door, which is legal. I was appalled when I found out about that and went back and researched it. And I guess back in 2000, there was some type of legislation that allowed them to do that. I don't think it's right. It hasn't worked for the patients. It hasn't worked for the provider. And I don't think it's working for the nation. So it's time to find some. I don't think it's going to be one huge bill is my guess. I think it's going to be things like strengthening telemedicine, doing some things, you know, for folks who do not have insurance, taking a look at that, making that, you know, their assistance, maybe supporting them. Incentivizing and employers to, you know, to provide good, sound, employer-provided health insurance. I mean, that was not mandated by law. That was something employers did as a perk to be able to recruit and retain the best and the brightest. And so I it's a very complex issue, and it's going to take and there's just not one solution to it. But I think there's some good ideas out there that we have to put forward and we have to do.
All right, so the Senate's going to have a vote next month. The House going to do this, or do you wait to see what the Senate does?
Well, we're probably going to wait and see what the Senate does because the Senate has to get 60 votes. And I will tell you, the Speaker's made no commitment to have a vote on this publicly. So I think he recognizes that this could be just masking the symptoms of failure if we do this. If there's some ideas that we can put together and put forward, maybe not all at once, but begin to, you know, just like we have already, you know, we've already done things that have, it's addressed pre-existing conditions. We've done things on telemedicine, critical access hospitals, rural health clinics, those types of things. Maybe it'd be kind of a figure out a short runway to, you know, to continue to help folks, you know, I don't know if it'd be a short runway for these subsidies, if that's an alternative, but knowing that, you know, that as a part of that is we're going to land the plane on some other types of really common sense healthcare solutions.
All right, now, Congressman, I have good news for you. I have the answer. I'm going to hand it to you right here. It is. Okay. How to solve health care in America. There it is.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, if you're a regular listener, I'm going to put my lobbyist hat on. Okay. Because this has kind of hit me recently. First off, my wife and I are in that penny thing. And yes, we've been informed, oh, yeah, next year, here's the cost. And when we picked ourselves up off the floor, I'm like, excuse me? What? So this has affected me personally and my family. Congressman, the only way this gets fixed is we need to change healthcare in this country. And we need to make it totally independent, totally transparent, get the government subsidies out of the way, full competition, total choice by consumers, like we do with pretty much any other business. You mentioned earlier that, well, okay, when you go out of state, you can't do this and you can't do that. Why? All right, you mentioned the vets are okay. That's great. What about the rest of us? Why can't the rest of us do that?
Yeah, well, I have a piece of legislation that would help on telemedicine and have the rest of us do it. Because I agree with you 100%. It needs to be, we needed more competition. We need less less consolidation, fewer monopolies. Yeah. That never works out in the end. I mean, you know, some people claim, well, it's a chance when you form that you can do consolidation, you do monopolies. You know, it's a chance, it's an opportunity to reduce your overhead costs. But in the end, we find that, I don't know, no matter what you're selling, the costs wind up going up when there's less competition. And so I agree with you. Those are the kind of principles that we should start with.
So what's it going to take to get there?
Yeah.
Well, I'm asking, what's it going to take to get there?
Well, it's going to take 60 votes in the Senate and 218 votes in the House. And hopefully, you know, hopefully this whole will be a heated debate about continuing these subsidies would be a motivator, to be able to spark putting forward some ideas. There's been a lot of good work done in this area. The Republican Study Committee has put together some, some good ideas. Not all of them were great ideas in the past, and I'm committed to trying to figure out what do we build on? Because it's let's build on the things that we've done with telemedicine, with critical access hospitals, where you come in, rural health clinics, where you pay based on your ability to pay. It's a sliding scale. They look at your income. Well, I thought, I've always supported that and very successfully. We actually, during COVID was able to have them be able to utilize, telemedicine. And I have a bill now that allows them to, that would allow them, working with Jill Takuda, who represents Hawaii, one of the two members in Hawaii, would allow them to continue to use telemedicine because that does increases access and bring costs down. It's, I think it's those types of innovation and technology that, that will be helpful in this going forward. I think there's a parallel effort going on with Secretary Kennedy. He has certainly put on the table about chronic, costly health conditions that people experience that are a big driver of health care. And if we can make some gains there, then that'll help with bringing down the cost of health care as well.
Why wouldn't the Democrats want all the things that you just said?
Oh, I think they would if we get them to the table. And that's been my style, right? Everything I do in a bipartisan way. I bring folks to the table. Never ask them to compromise their principles and values. I think that kind of defines who we are. But I ask them to leave it at the door. And be willing to come to the table. So as we're looking at solving a problem, we can let's talk about what we can agree upon, not what we disagree upon. I've had a lot of success with that. I mean, the classic, I think, was reforming career and technical education, which honestly we know works because career and technical education schools now have waiting lists. And many of them, most one closest to us probably be Williamsport, is they're looking to build on. They're actually don't want to do bricks and mortar because of the demand. And to give you an example of what happened there, we brought people to the table early, and not just the people with voting cards. We brought students and parents and employers. And at the end of the day, that bill was voted on five times between the House and the Senate. And not a single member of the House or Senate voted against that piece of legislation. And that bill, because of how we how I managed it and approached it, is my legislation. Since President Trump signed it last day of July 2018, and it was cool to be in the Oval Office with him when he did that. Now we have waiting lists, and we have we've reduced the stigma. I think that's the kind of effort we're going to need to take when it comes to health care, versus there's two types of negotiations, right? There's positional bargaining. And I experienced that as a recovering school board member, right? I'm right, you're wrong. And the conflict are fist to fist, it's just, or there's interest bargaining, where you bring people to the table and you find out what the common interests are. And that's how I got, I've been successful in telemedicine, on career and technical education, on all those agriculture and other education issues. And I think that's the approach that's going to have to happen, when it comes to healthcare. And it's an approach that works whether you've got a 100-seat majority or whether you got a 1-seat majority, I think. But it's an honest willingness to come together and have people at the table and to be able to listen to the others that are at the table as well.
All right, Mr. Ironhead.
How common is that right now in D.C., that willingness to listen? And that's a genuine question.
It's tough right now because of it's so emotional laden. I mean, there's a lot of folks who anything that President Trump's going to put a signature on is not worthy of supporting. It's worthy of opposing, despite the fact that even good sound bipartisan ideas, but I wish more members would put put the nation before the politics. But that is that's an issue I've witnessed from time to time, obviously. I think I've done a pretty good job of in my service of, because of working on facilitating that change. A current issue that we're doing right now, and I think we've talked about this before, is restoring whole milk and flavor back in our schools. We are so close to doing that. I have a bill. It's got 108 co-sponsors, and it's nicely divided between Republicans and Democrats. And right now I'm working with a Democratic senator from, I won't say what state, but not Pennsylvania, because Senator Fetterman is on board fully with this bill. And she put a hold. I mean, it passed unanimously out of the Senate Agriculture Committee, and she put a hold on the bill. Senate's kind of a strange animal where you need 60 votes, and one senator can hold up a vote on anything. And but if I'd have taken a positional bargaining perspective on that, I would have just been angry, right? I reached out, and I used some of my contacts that I have, including Secretary Russell Redding, who reached out to the secretary of her state's agriculture secretary. And it turns out when you do interest bargaining, you find out what it is. She was concerned with kids being labeled as disabled. If they got an exemption from whole milk because of being lactose intolerant. Well, I hate the fact that we see so many kids being labeled as disabled. I'm fully on board with that, but if I wouldn't have done interest bargaining, I would have never discovered that. And so now we're working on language that tries to take the disabled language out of the existing law, just because you can't drink a certain beverage, and replace it with my recommendation. Well, let's replace it with medical necessity. And so we're not labeling anybody. But that's an example of a real life, most recent example of good interest bargaining, listening to each other. And I'm looking forward, hopefully before the end of the year, of having a great milk toast as we've restored the most nutritious option of the most nutritious beverage for our kids. And dairy is still our biggest commodity, agriculture commodity in Pennsylvania, and they've been hurting ever since whole milk and flavor was demonized back in 2010. Our rural communities have lost feed stores and processors. Even we've lost, once population leaves, you lose your pharmacies, your grocery stores, and we have a chance to reverse that curse, and through dairy maybe help to strengthen many rural communities throughout the country. All from just taking the opportunity to listen to each other.
Yeah. Congressman Thompson with a milk mustache.
I have a picture like that.
That could be an interesting picture. Yeah, well, okay.
Anything to cover this face up would be okay.
I didn't want to say anything. Oh,
hey, now.
Whoa. Let's take a break. Yeah, here we go. Congressman Glenn Thompson's our guest. One more segment. Again, I've got 2 hours worth of questions, so I'm going to have to boil it down. You're listening to Let's Talk on 98.7 The Fox. Oh, more good stuff when we come right back.
Your home for the Goon and Ironhead.
Ironhead and the Goon.
Exclusively on Sports Radio 98.7
The Fox.
Kevin Harlan here from Monday Night Football on Westwood One. Join us all season long for primetime action on the road to the playoffs and Super Bowl 60. Each week, Hall of Fame quarterback Kurt Warner and I will have the call of great matchups, along with Mike Golick, senior and junior, in the studio. Don't miss out on the great NFL tradition that is Monday Night Football.
Catch all the action all season long. Sports Radio 98.7, The Fox. Looking for something different? But you want something that's quick and affordable that won't set you back in the pocketbook? Then you need to head down to Brothers Pizza and Courthouse Pub right next to the Center County Courthouse on North Allegheny Street in downtown Belfast. They feature only the best pizza in town and also the finest selections from Robin Hood Brewing Company, University Wines, and Big Spring Liquors. Come celebrate happy hour in Happy Valley every Tuesday through Saturday from 4 to 6 at Brothers Pizza and Courthouse Pub in downtown Belfast.
Eating healthy is important for us and for our animals. The Center Hall Farm Store knows this. Local, fresh ingredients are put in all of our feeds. Expert care from people ingrained in our community. If you haven't been to the Center Hall Farm Store yet, do yourself and your animals a favor and stop on in at 110 Allison Street in Center Hall. See what a difference the local touch can make in providing real quality. And be sure to check out our website at centerhallfarmstore.com.
Getting ready for tailgating or weekend? You need to stock up at the 64 Beer Store near Lamar. The 64 Beer Store has the coldest beer in the county. Over 400 selections, including IPAs, ciders, Oktoberfest beers, cocktails, and wines. The 64 Beer Store carries ready-to-drink cocktails. Conveniently located near Lamar on Nittany Valley Drive, just a half mile north from I-80 on Route 64. On the way from here to there. Stop in today.
This is Jim Galante from the Keystone Sports Network. For the best Penn State football analysis and commentary, join me, Dustin Hawkinsmith, T. Frank Carr, Andy Shea, and Jeff Byers every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 3 p.m. right here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox and State College. We'll bring you game reviews, player evaluation, recruiting news, and plenty more on the Nittany Lions. That's Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 3 p.m. right here on Fox Sports 98.7 for the Keystone Kickoff Show.
It's Let's Talk here on a Friday morning. Jeff and Scott with you. Congressman G.T. Thompson, Glenn Thompson, joining us in studio this morning. G.T., I wanted to talk a little bit, just the listening thing, and I've been trying to do better at listening. And I do think there are some legitimate concerns, and I'm just wondering your perspective on, and it feels like we just do this with almost everything in our society. In college sports, we've talked a lot about, you know, we went from kids couldn't transfer without penalty of sitting out a year, you couldn't accept the cream cheese on your bagel to a recruiting visit, to now you can get millions of dollars and you can go anywhere you want from month to month. It's like, well, maybe somewhere in between there is where we should have settled. The two things that I want to bring up, because I'm a big fan, generally speaking, of the goals of DOGE, and I think that that was important. I also do wonder if, at least in some cases, we went too far, we weren't specific enough. Like, I know people that work in different industries, including my wife with mental health care, and it's like, ooh, why are we cutting that? Like, that doesn't make sense. And again, it feels like we went from, yeah, just give the money and, you know, they'll figure it out. And it's like, well, no, that's not good. But also, let's just cut everything. And I'm overstating it, I realize. But
no, I don't think
some of this stuff, is vitally important. And by the way, I think some of it, we could work out other ways to fund it. I don't think, but we haven't done that. It wasn't like, all right, we'll fund this, but we got to figure this out. It was, nope, it's stopped. And then we've been backtracking on some things, and I get it. But in the meantime, some folks were hurt by it. I start there, just your thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, no, I think you're spot on. It was, talk about a swing, you know, from one extreme to another. Now, the swing probably paid some dividends only because it created a cost-conscious culture that I don't think we've, at least in my experience, we really haven't had that in government. You know, when you can dip into the pockets of American taxpayers and taxpaying families, it's like it was a bottomless pit of we just spend and spend and spend. And in all fairness, I will say with the debt, the one thing that differentiates the federal government from the state government is, in times of war, has no obligation for funding that. And it is very, very, very expensive, both in treasury and in lives. And so, and that was a big debt driver. I mean, we've been at war for a long time in the Middle East. But we have, things have kind of I describe it as a pendulum. You know, the one side was reckless spending. The other side was, in some cases, reckless cuts. And I've argued about that. I've communicated that to the White House. I've been concerned about losing certain key positions that really are important that we have a responsibility for in terms of advancement. But the pendulum has come back to the middle. At the same time, it's come back, but I think we do have this fiscal accountability culture now that we have not had. And that's probably the most important success that the whole DOGE experience had or created. Give you an example. Part of the bill was everyone that had been furloughed back to a certain time had been brought back on the job. The secretaries now have been, or the administrators have been charged with, doing a review of their programs. Is this something that government should be doing? Or is there a better way to do it? Is there other means to be able to deal with it? Or does it need to be done at all? It's amazing some of the things I think they found that, it really should not have been occurring anyways. And so those folks have been brought back but I do think we're in a new era. And I don't know if we've been in this era in the past or not. I really don't have first-hand experience in that. But at least from my time in my service, we're really in a cost-conscious, being better stewards of the taxpayer dollar. We use those, we invest those on behalf of the citizens of this country, and it should be the things that we should be doing, and we shouldn't be doing certain other things.
Along the same lines, immigration was illegal immigration was a disaster. I don't know how you could not see it that way under Joe Biden. I know there are some Democrats that don't see it that way. I just think you have your head buried in the sand. At the same time, I am supportive. We've got to get the violent criminals that are here illegally off the streets, make the streets safer, all of that. Also, I do wonder if we're going a little too far when you read about some specific instances of folks that have been here 20 years, have not caused any problems, and it's like, yeah, but in the process of finding this, I know they're saying they're targeting the violent people. Let's maybe just go after them first, and then let's figure out with some of these other people, let's get them in line with the law. But if you've been here 20 years, and you've been paying your taxes, and you're raising kids here, come on. We do have other priorities, my opinion, that we need to be focused on.
Yes, I think there are some folks who are getting caught up in this that probably shouldn't be caught up in, at least at this point. The fact is, if you came here illegally, you did break the law. But at the same time, we need to look at the needs of the nation. It'd be great to think that we really don't need anyone to come from anywhere else in the world, to be able to fulfill our workforce needs, that we can do it all with U.S. citizens. But the fact is, we can't.
Yeah.
If we totally shut out bringing individuals from providing a pathway for folks to come here, not for citizenship, but to be able to work in the agriculture industry, we would be facing food insecurity and national insecurity. It would ruin our economy because agriculture is a huge part of our economy. I was always told every time I've raised, because I've brought proposals up in the past that, like the students graduating, foreign group students, we subsidize every education at Penn State, even though they may pay big tuition. There's still government dollars that subsidize that. And we have a lot of kids, young people from foreign countries come. They get a world-class education, and then we send them home to kick our butts economically. I've always argued that we ought to do a merit system. Not everybody, but if if you've got a skill set, if you've got an idea, if you've got something that you've created or invented, that we could grow jobs around, that maybe we ought to have a pathway for you to be able to stay if you choose to, and to grow that business and to create jobs for for U.S. citizens.
Yeah.
And so, but I've been always told in the past, and that's something I've worked on in the past. And by the way, I wouldn't let government dictate, do the judging. I would go to the Chamber of Commerce. I would go for the Workforce Investment Board. The people would actually know what the needs are. I'd take the government out of that part of it.
Amen.
And so we, but I've always been told, no matter what I've worked on in the past, that, oh, we just can't do that because the border's not closed. Well, I've got news for you. Border's closed today.
Yeah.
And so that excuse is off the table, and I think that's generally recognized. I've had that discussion with a good friend of mine from Ohio, Jim Jordan, another fellow wrestler.
Yep.
And he's ready, I think, and prepared to start entertaining ideas because it would have to go through judiciary. I've been working on a piece of legislation. I think we maybe – I think we would be introducing it by now, but unfortunately the last – it had to do with providing certainty for agricultural workforce using – one of the visa programs, taking some of the bureaucracy out of it. No pathway to citizenship, but something that would just work better, work smoother. I mean, if you're a U.S. citizen and you don't have a job and you want a job, I could probably get you one today working on in either production or processing when it comes to agriculture. But a lot of industries we could find jobs today. This legislation would probably be introduced by now if Senator Schumer hadn't shut the government down, because when he did, we're at a point where we needed technical assistance from the Department of Labor, and those folks were all furloughed. Now, the basis for that and why I'm somewhat optimistic, I had a 16-member, 8 Republicans, 8 Democrats, that put together these ideas last Congress. And one of those members is now the Secretary of Labor, Lori Chavez Dreamer. She was a part of the task force that I had appointed, and she's a good friend. And so I think what we're doing could really serve as a template for maybe other industries. This is going to be specifically focused on agriculture production and processing.
The other thing I just wanted to bring up and get your thoughts on, because I'm struggling on what the solution is, so I don't think this is an easy answer one. But every time we get like a mass shooting or something horrific, and it is somebody that is clearly mentally unstable, which is pretty much every one of those cases, it's like, man, we've got to do something about mental health. And I mean, Democrats will also throw in the gun issue. But on the mental health side of it, there's a lot of folks that are in favor of the red flag laws. And if I felt confident that they would be consistently applied effectively, I might kind of be in support of that. But it's just too easy for somebody who is in a feud with somebody else, and I know he likes to hunt, I'm going to show him, and you call up the local officials, and I heard this guy's think, and there's nothing to it, but until they get to the bottom of that, there he is without his guns during hunting season, and or something along those lines. Just a very broad question. From a government standpoint, again, make America healthy again, I'm supportive of that. But the mental health has to be a big component of that. And when you see the impact that social media is having, I think the concerns with AI, which is another whole discussion we can have moving forward, we are losing a lot of young, literally losing them, because of the morass that they're finding themselves in. Again, open-ended question, because I don't think it's, Jeff, this is what we need to do, and then the problem's solved. And I understand that. Your thoughts on what can be done from a governmental standpoint to at least try to help curb some of the issues we're having?
Well, mental health issues have always been among the most significant and most challenging, right? Because for many with mental health issues, and I both worked in and managed acute psychiatric services as a part of my healthcare career for a number of years. And they're the most chronic and reoccurring.
Yeah.
I mean, even to the point where insurance coverage normally had it was idiotic. It had a limit on the number of visits you could have despite being a lifetime disability that you need to live with. I think we always think reactive, and I think you're right. There's no one answer, but I'd like to be proactive. One of the things I'd like to see us do, and we've talked about, we talk about this a lot, we just haven't figured out the final form, I think, or the form to move. And that really is to, you know, a place where we can influence all of our young people, and that's really through our school system. How do we equip our schools to be, you know, to deal reactively when somebody has some type of incident, something, whether it's no matter how dangerous it is to themselves or someone else, I think we need to do a better job of equipping our schools, but just not for reactive. We need to figure out, how are we proactive? How are we teaching how to maintain mental health? You know, those are sometimes it's coping skills. Sometimes it's just, you know, common sense courtesy of how we treat each other. But Jeff, I think you're right. It's tough because of, you know, the cyberbullying, and now with AI, the stuff that you can make things that help people, things that people look and what they're doing. It's only gotten more and more difficult. But I do think we need to approach it from two perspectives. One is equipping to deal with it reactive, but the other one, really, most importantly, they will pay, I think, huge dividends over time on a more courteous, a safer society, and that's being proactive.
Congressman, we're out of time. We got to take our last break here, but as always, we appreciate you coming in. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks so much, guys.
Always good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
And wrestling season's beginning, so life will be good again.
Amen.
Not only is the government open, wrestling season's underway.
Gosh, I'm surrounded by lugheads here.
Take it to the